Okay, hey everybody. We're doing something different today. We usually do sermons on our podcast, but I went to Pastor David a few weeks ago and I was like, hey, why don't we try doing like a conversation style interview podcast instead of just uploading sermons? Because there's just not a lot out there about ministry and life and church history and that kind of thing. So we're going to talk a little bit today about the history of our church, how Pastor David got here, how we kind of got our culture to what it is, because, I mean, you kind of built, he's here, Pastor David's here.
I'm here.
He kind of built, I feel like you kind of built the church kind of from the ground up when you started, so.
We were in trouble.
And yeah.
I think we resurrected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we're going to talk a little bit about that today, because a lot of people don't really know how we got to where we are. And I think that's really important, like, as far as, like, our culture and our community here. So, Pastor David, if you want to tell us a little bit, let's start with how you got to New Covenant.
So, originally, I came to New Covenant as a college student back in the 80s. What? back in the 80s, and I was looking for something more and something Spirit-filled. And actually, I got baptized in the Holy Spirit in this building on a Thursday morning in the sanctuary by myself, just praying and crying out to God. And I was like in 84, 85, and then in 86, God spoke to me and told me I'd be the pastor here, but I did not want to live in Statesboro, and so I was kind of not interested in that. And I got married here and we moved away. But because the Lord had spoken to me that I was going to be the pastor, somehow this place was always connected to my heart. Mm-hmm. And every time there was a pastoral change, I heard about it through the grapevine and through friends, and something tugged my heart every time. And yeah. I really wanted to come back. But anyway, that said, I was pastoring in Texas. I was on staff at a large church in Texas, and I was on my way to play golf one morning with a friend, and as I'm driving out there, the Lord spoke to me about my friend Mark Evans, and who was at the time was pastoring in Sylvania. Mm-hmm. And is this too much story? Is this
no,
important?
You're doing so great.
The Lord spoke to me about New Covenant, or He said that. So here's the word: someone is going to offer Mark a second church to pastor, and that he should do it. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was fun or funny or whatever. So it's 8 o'clock in the morning, Central Time. So I pick up my cell phone and I call Mark. And I go, bro, this is the funniest word I just got. And he goes, that's not funny because that happened last night.
Wow.
And he goes, they call me from New Covenant and they want me to pastor New Covenant, but I'm pastoring my church in Screven County. Mm-hmm. What do I do? And as I'm now sitting in the trunk of my car, putting on my golf shoes, I go, hey, here's what you need to do. I gave him a list of about 8 things to do.
Yeah.
And said, hey, I'll call you later, and hung up. And I called him back that night, and he goes, yeah, I called them. I told them everything you said. They accepted. And so now I'm the pastor of New Covenant.
Wow.
What do I do?
Yeah.
And that started this conversation of what do I do, which probably lasted for a long time.
Yeah.
Months. And I would talk to him at least once a week for an hour. And we're trying to figure out how he can bring this church back from the dead. It had 35 people, no money. It was terrible.
And yeah.
Anyway, so we set up a plan. And then he starts inviting me to come and help him. And I'm like, bro, there's no way. I don't want to come to Statesboro. I'm sorry. Not interested. And we met in San Antonio because we lived in Texas. And he was there for a meeting. We met in San Antonio. And we're just talking. I go, hey, here's what you need to do. Grab, you know, the grab a napkin and a pen in the restaurant kind of conversation. And I org chart something for him. And he goes, no way. That's what we talked about last night, me and my wife. That's exactly what we need. And I go, yeah, that's what you need. He goes, yeah. Why don't you come and run this? I go, no, bro, there's no way. And anyway, so that was like the summer of 2009.
Wow.
I guess. And we came out here to check it out. So I brought Elena and Zach and myself. We came over here for a weekend to check it out. It may have not even been a weekend. We came over to check it out, and I just thought, oh my God, this place is so pitiful.
Did you guys just go to like a Sunday service? Like,
I don't even know that we went to Sunday service. Did we go to a Sunday service, Zach? He didn't remember. I just remember walking in the office lobby area out here. I walked in. It was just so depressing and dark. I just thought, oh, Jesus, there's no way.
Yeah.
No way. I looked at my wife and I like shook my head no. Yeah. I said, there's no way. There's no way. And 4 months later, we sold our house and moved. Living in an apartment while we built our house, which is a whole miracle story. But so I'm not the pastor at this point. I'm helping Mark, who I would say Mark was my best friend at the time, or, you know, top five best friend kind of thing from MySpace. And so I'm helping Mark and helping a little bit with his other, with both the churches, and trying to coordinate things for him, with him. And we definitely had our challenges. Primary among them was we had no money.
Yeah.
And there's not a lot of enthusiasm in the church. And it was kind of... Anyway, so we did that for a while. And about November of that year, 2010, Mark really wanted to be in Atlanta, in Douglasville, actually, with his dad, and help his dad with his church. Mm-hmm. And he ends up resigning. All ends up saying that in about April of 2011, I took the church as the senior pastor. We had 80 people, $11.
The $11 part.
Yeah, the $11 part.
Me.
Yeah. $11 in the bank. And it was just so terrible. I end up having to sell my Mercedes that I brought from Texas to cover bills. And it was a really rough season.
Yeah.
Missed a couple paychecks. Had to beg for Georgia Power bill to get paid and that kind of stuff. So
that's so different, I feel like, from what we are now. Like, I can't even like imagine New Covenant as that. Like, what do you think like culturally we looked like then versus like now?
It was not anything like where we are now, for sure.
Yeah.
And I remember Zach and I having conversations somewhere along the way about we've really got to fix our culture and the church experience product before we actually do any kind of advertising, because people would show up to the church and it was just depressing. I was depressed.
Same thing,
I was struggling. But like I remember saying the prayer at the end of the service, like, I'm closing my eyes, I'm going to pray like a benediction, and people are leaving. So I open my eyes up, and there's like two people left. And you're like, what the heck? What happened? And people just, there was no continuity. There was no family. I think people were here because they felt obligated to be here somehow. And now it's totally different because people love this place, and we have to shoo them out of the building an hour after service is over. I think people love ministry and own the ministry more than they ever have before. I don't know if that really answers your question about the culture, but
I think so.
We have spent years communicating the culture that we want. Like, we're a prophetic church, and we're a word believing church, and we are everyone serves and volunteers church. We've communicated what we want, because every church has a culture. You will either direct it and make it what you want it to be, or you'll just deal with it.
Yeah.
Like, you'll just experience it, and too bad, so sad.
Yeah, that makes sense. I feel like, too, like, this church, like, kind of came from a group of people wanting more of God.
Totally.
I mean, like, with Brooks and KK, like, a lot of this was, like, birthed out of, like, hey, we don't want to just go to church and just attend. Like, we want way more than that. And I feel like, too, like, that's a lot of our congregation, is like, they show up and like, maybe at first they're just attending, but like, I feel like we're really good about like, hey, like, what are you interested in? We want to raise you up in it and like teach you about it. Like, if you want more of God, like, we have classes and like all these different things. So like, I don't know. I just feel like we're so different now culturally from like that. And so even thinking about this, I'm like, I can't imagine like New Covenant like being depressing or like dark and like all those things. But I guess, like, leading into that, like, I'm curious about, like, how your family dynamic has, like, worked with pastoring, if that makes sense. Like, how have you, like, raised three kids and also have been pastoring and, like, bringing a church literally from the ground up and being a dad and a husband at the same time?
And we've done this several times. We started a church in Tulsa that we started with a handful of people, like 10 people, and grew it to a church of 500. We birthed two churches in Texas. And so we've done this several times. And I'm sure that in many occasions I have either neglected my kids because I've been busy. Mm-hmm. I have pushed my kids into ministry, maybe when they weren't all excited about it from time to time. And I've told stories about them from the pulpit, which I have probably embarrassed them. And, you know, I can, even now I'll tell a story about Zach and I can watch him kind of put his head in his hands going, oh gosh. But I'm sure there's a ton of things I need to repent for to my kids. But I remember one time we were in Tulsa and it was a Christmas Eve and the piano player was a no-show. And I called him up, like, you know, it's 20 minutes till service. I call him up and he's like, oh, is that today? Kind of a comment.
Yeah.
And so I go to Johanna, who was probably 11 and been taking piano lessons. I go, baby, I need you to rescue me. And so she played, you know, all the Christmas music that she knew in the service with 20 minutes notice on piano.
Yeah.
And, you know, Silent Night. And we probably didn't do Rudolph, but. So, but somehow through all of that on the other side, my kids all love the Lord. My kids all serve in ministry. Ian loves ministry out at ORU. Johanna helps lead worship in her local church where she is in Tulsa. And, of course, Zach's, I think this is his second home, if not his first. And we all love ministry because we all love the Lord. And I think the kids have seen in me that the person I am in the pulpit is the person I am at home.
Yeah.
And that I think that's important because if children see, you know, there's preacher dad and then regular dad, that there's an incongruency that causes confusion. And I don't think I'm incongruent, if you will. I am who I am. I'm not perfect. And I mean, I had a really good conversation with Ian last night about how I need to get over, how I need to stop being condescending.
Yeah.
Which was like a great poke in the eye, but I needed it, so.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, so you've been pastoring how many years?
I think June will be 40.
40 years. That's a long time.
This June. Well, not pastoring, but in ministry.
Yeah, just doing
like
ministry.
Like I was a Christian camp counselor getting a paycheck.
Yeah.
In June of 1984 was my first. And then immediately after that, I was a youth pastor at a church. And with very few exceptions, I've been in full-time ministry ever since.
Yeah.
Like there was a couple months before we moved back here that I didn't. I wasn't in ministry, but.
That makes sense. So what's your biggest win in the 40 years?
I think the biggest win is I've learned how to give away ministry.
Yeah.
So I really want to empower people to do stuff and do ministry. And I think I'm getting good at giving it away and I'm happy with it. I don't feel challenged or intimidated by people that do A or B better than me.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to give stuff to them.
Right. Yeah. And I feel like, too, like, our church is really good about giving ministry away. Like, I know you told me, like, the whole point that I, like, work here is because, like, I was building teams at the time. And, like, just, like, really, I don't know, elevating, like, what it means to, like, be a team and, like, work as a team and, like, that kind of thing. And I feel like.
And you're a great team builder. You really are.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Yeah. I could be better about it always. There's always something to learn, but I don't know. I even feel like too, like Zach, like he has obviously this whole team of people that do this, but like Michael is like in charge of youth and like Loy's in charge of Sunday nights. And so like, I feel like our team is like really good about, hey, you're good at this. Like not only am I going to like give this away, but I'm also going to teach you how to like be good at leading a team and how to be good at raising people up and like that kind of thing. Like, I don't know, at least when I got here, like, I don't know, Zach kind of took me under his wing and was like, hey, you're going to learn from me now, because obviously I was not the best kid. I was awful at the time. I was so mean, but I learned like through a lot of like, hey, don't do that. Hey, you can do that. Or don't say that, or those kind of things. But I feel like we're really good about like just building teams and teaching people how to like raise other people up. So
And we probably have, I don't know, 175 people that are active volunteers.
Yeah. Which is wild to me.
In Planning Center, which is great.
Yeah. And I feel like too, like a lot of our people serve like wherever they're needed. Like, it's not like, hey, I'm in nursery, like I can't help out with production. Like, they'll help out wherever like they need. But I feel like that too is like a good sign of a really healthy church of like,
it's part of the culture too. You know, part of the reason we do the volunteer appreciation thing is to celebrate volunteers, because what you celebrate, people are attracted to, I guess.
Yeah,
it's probably a better way to say that.
But. Yeah. I know what you mean. I wonder, like, how, like, our volunteer, like, what would you say is, like, the best way to translate vision to volunteers?
Like, how do you so vision, like, cast to volunteers?
Yeah, or? So, like, I'm a leader. Like, how can I, like, obviously there's so many different areas of ministry that we have here, like, production, nursery, like all these different things. Like, how do I, like, in my ministry, cast the church as a whole's vision to like a volunteer?
I think you explain to the person, like, you paint the picture of what it's going to produce. So you're not taking a picture. You are creating an image that is going to affect somebody on social media, and that the Holy Spirit will use that image to stir them to come to church or to seek the Lord.
Yeah.
And so this picture is a tool that will lead someone to the presence of the Lord.
Right.
It's not, this is a 35 millimeter push the button.
Yeah.
And so if it's button pushing, that's terrible.
Yeah.
It's like super boring. But if it's, you know, hey, I'm working in the nursery to change poopy diapers, is terrible.
Yeah.
But I have a chance to minister to this kid and pray over this kid and sing over this child and touch their spirit, then that's ministry, and I'm affecting this kid for eternity. Then that's an easier sell, if you will. Does that make sense?
So have we always had our vision? Or, like, when did we develop, like, our vision is transforming lives through encounter.
Correct.
So, when did we develop, like, was that something that just, like, came to you? Or was it, like, something you saw in the body and was like, this is our vision, like?
When I first came, and there was a stated vision statement that had something to do with reaching reaching college students. And it was, like, 25 words long, and I can't remember it to this day. And long story made short, I had the opportunity to be mentored by a guy in Atlanta. You know the comedian John Crist?
Yes.
His dad, who was a pastor, who was a Vineyard pastor in Atlanta for a long time, and then was the mayor of his town. And anyway, so he mentored me.
Nice.
And one of the things he did was say, you're really terrible at firing people. You need to figure that out. And I still haven't yet. I'm sorry. But he goes, your vision statement's terrible.
Yeah.
You know, you need to reduce your vision statement to three or four words. Mm-hmm. And if everyone can't repeat it just on an instant, then it's terrible.
Yeah.
And if it's only focused at college students and you're eliminating this whole rest of this population who you want to reach.
Yeah.
And so he helped me to recraft it down to transforming lives through encounter, because that's what we want.
Yeah.
We want people's lives to be transformed because they met Jesus, not because they came to this church or this address or this property.
Yeah.
But because they had a moment with Jesus, their lives are different. He helped us to craft that statement.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I don't think I ever, like, before I got here, like, went to a church and knew the vision statement like I know here. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like we, like, I don't know. Like, I just know it. Like, it comes, like, anytime I'm doing something, it comes to the top of my head. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, this is why I'm here and this is what we're doing, if that makes sense. Well, I don't know if I have any more questions, but you good, PD?
I'm good.
Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Tell me why you like working here.
Oh, goodness. There's a long, long list that I could go through. Well, for starters, a lot of it is the people, which is really funny because that's the part I struggle with the most.
Yes.
I really struggle with that. Mainly because I think that I'm so, like, the same as a lot of the people, and that's why I love them, because I'm like, oh, you just get me. But and then that's, like, also the reason that, like, I have a hard time, because I'm like, oh, you get me too much. Like, mm-hmm. But a lot of it is, like, I don't know. Like, even from the, like, when I walked in to New Covenant, like, I just was so drawn to the people here and, like, the culture, too. But, like, a lot of it was community. Like, I obviously grew up, like, kind of without, like, parents to, like, really guide me. And mm-hmm. so, like, when I got here, I was like, oh, my gosh, like, you and your wife. I'm like, oh, that's what marriage looks like. And then, like, Zach and Hannah, I'm like, oh, that's what it's like to have parents and people that care about you. And, like, having true friends. And I don't know. And so a lot of it was like, oh, my gosh, like, I have people that care about me. And, like, when I got hired and actually started working here, like, about a year in, I was like, oh, these people, like, are really here to see me succeed. Like, it's not like, like, a lot of times, like, I feel like I would get so frustrated in my first year because I was like, why is this this way? And why is that? Because when you start working in a church, you start seeing all the ins and the outs. Yeah, and that's definitely. Like, it can be hard the first time because you just don't know. Like, and you're from a congregational view, you're just like, oh, like, this is great and this is awesome. I don't see any of, like, the hard stuff. And so when I started working here, I was like, oh my gosh, like, there's so many hard things that I'm going to have to, like, process that I didn't know existed. But then, like, after my first year, I was like, oh, these people are not out to get me. Like, they have my best interests in mind. And, like, these are the people, like, when I showed up that I really loved. And, like, why am I feeling weird about it now? And, like, that whole thing. And so I really had to come to terms with, like, these people love me. And, like, this is community and this is family. We obviously have our, like, moments because we're family. And so I would say, like, my number one reason is, like, I really, really value the people here and how much they care about not just me, but, like, other people around me in the church. Like, even, like, you on in staff being like, hey, we need to recognize who's not here. And, like, we need to be reaching out to these people. Like, that says to me, like, that's why, like, I work here. Mm-hmm. That's why I, like, fell in love with the people here, is because we actually care and aren't just a church who are worried about butts and seats and attendance and stuff like that. So I'd say people. It's a long way to say that, but...
Yeah, and people are great, and people are the joy, and people are the reason, but also people are the mess.
Yeah. So,
you know, you kind of wish that people weren't messy, but if they were, you know, if we're just a fleet of robots, mm-hmm. then what's the point? You don't need to do that.
Yeah.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
You love people, and you learn, and people rub you the wrong way, and you keep coming back.
Yeah. You just forgive and forgive and forgive again.
Yeah, but there's so many aspects of Christianity that can't be done by yourself.
Yeah.
Like, if I lived all by myself and there was no one there, who am I going to learn to forgive?
Yeah.
And who am I going to learn to agree with?
Right.
And who am I going to, you know, how am I going to enjoy your different gifting if you're not there?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there's so many things that require me to be around people. Uh-huh.
I agree. Because even, like, when I am, like, oh, I'm done. Like, because I'm obviously a teenager, and I have my moments where I'm like, I can't do this anymore, and I get overwhelmed. But the second I, like, go and I'm actually thinking about it, I'm sitting with the Lord, I'm like, oh, man, I need these people. Like, yeah. I can't do this by myself. Like, I was never made to have to figure it out on my own. Something, too, that's been really, like, I don't know, special to me is, like, even when I have been in my moments where I'm like, I can't do this anymore, like, I've noticed that, like, I don't know, I'll use Zach and Hannah for example, like, they're willing to get into the mess. Like, they're not like, well, India, like, you've just messed up too many times. You've been a brat. You've had an attitude. Like, all these things are like, okay, why are you feeling this way? Like, what's going on? Like, how can we help? Like, what do you need from us? Like, it's not like, hey, you've done this too many times and you've had an attitude too many times. Like, you do just need to be done. It's like, hey, we'll sit with you in your mess, like, while you're being mean to us, and we'll figure it out with you. And so I really love that, like, we're willing, like, in ministry to get into other people's mess, because obviously people are going to make a mess. We're people.
Absolutely. But. And as long as people are willing to, willing to say, oh, yeah, I'm not perfect and I need to grow here.
Yeah.
Then we'll keep walking.
Yeah.
When people are like, oh, no, it's just not happening and I'm not, you know, and I'm not, you're wrong, I'm not doing it. Yeah. Then it becomes really hard.
Yeah. In denial. Yeah. That's, like, the worst place to be. But, yeah. People are peoply.
People are peoply.
To wrap this up, people are peoply. Yeah.
But Jesus is awesome.
Yes.
And he came to fix our mess.
Yes, he did. So,
cool. Well, thanks for having me on and interviewing and setting this all up. Thanks to Zach for engineering it over there.
Yeah, go Zach.
And I hope if someone is still listening at this point of this podcast, thank you for being on and we love you.
Yep. We love you. Bye.